Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Hi, everyone. Welcome into Bartholomew Town's continuing coverage of the impact of COVID-19 here in Rhode Island. I'm Bill Bartholomew. On today's episode, a conversation with Rhode Island Lieutenant Governor Dan McKee and community health advocate Dr. Luis Daniel Munoz. Well, good afternoon, Lieutenant Governor. Wow, we're losing track of everything here. Good morning, Lieutenant Governor.
Good morning, Bill. Hi, Doctor.
Good morning.
Well, a true pleasure. Thanks for doing this. Figure we'll do like 15 minutes or so right now. We're able to get Dr. Munoz on here, an invaluable resource in general, but certainly in this moment. So what prompted this conversation was your own show, the Ask the Lieutenant Governor program, which you've initiated, which has been a great community resource. And the conversation on rationing of testing and just sort of not zeroing in on the major problems that we're experiencing here in this crisis. Lieutenant Governor, if you could just sort of give us an overview of some of the work that your office has been doing on everything from small businesses and acquisition of PPE to now taking a look at some of these complaints and major issues that are emerging from communities of color.
Yeah, so... I think it's pretty well known that we're working on behalf of all the small businesses in the state of Rhode Island, regardless of what community they're from, regardless of what, you know, community they represent. And across the board, we're working on that and heavily advocating right now for some grants to be used from the federal CARE money to help the small businesses that have been required to close so that they can survive. So we've been doing a lot and also advocating for a state guaranteed program, working very strongly with the local banks and put favorable loans out for our small businesses that have been impacted by this COVID-19 to which they all have been a serious degree. So working very hard for the small businesses. But as you mentioned, Bill, that we also have been very involved with every community in the state. The Hispanic community, we've been translating into Spanish every one of the governor's press conferences since they started with Rosa in our office into the Spanish community. And we've used the broadcast, as you said, that we're doing to highlight some of the disproportionate infection rates that are happening in different communities. Had a Lieutenant Governor from Michigan on, who's heading up a study to actually determine why this is happening in the African-American community, the Black community in Michigan. And also the other areas that have been impacted. Rhode Island has not been exempt from that. We've had high infection rates in the Hispanic community, in the Black community, a minority community, and in the low-income communities, right? So we got to really address that. So we're doing that. I think you heard the other night in particular, which I really took interest in, was Shanabi's statement on the Asian community. Not only are they being impacted by the virus, but they're also being impacted through intimidation because of Donald Trump calling it a Chinese virus. And then they haven't been exempt from that intimidation in their businesses or their regular life. And yet we haven't found a way to allocate funds from the federal dollars, the CARE dollars, to actually help them outdo their job. So, yes, we're going to be advocating for everybody that lives in the state, regardless of they're in Forster, Gloucester, or East Greenwich, or on the south side of Providence.
Dr. Munoz, that's been the crux of your work in the last few months as well, is really zeroing in on health equity. But then it's actually been the crux of much of your career. But if you could sort of explain in a nutshell, what are the major issues that you have been advocating about? And one of them I know is obviously testing and access to testing. And then perhaps Lieutenant Governor, you could respond to that as well, that sort of crisis of rationing that we're experiencing right now.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Bill, for having me on the show. And, you know, I agree with the Lieutenant Governor. We're all interconnected here, right? And so when we're talking about a pandemic and a highly transmissible disease, the reality is that as much as it affects one community, it will eventually also impact another community. And we've seen this health crisis turn into an economic crisis. So what we've done, and when I say we, you know, as an individual, I've always advocated for these things, but one person can't create the necessary change, right? It needs to be a group and a community together. And so community leaders and organizations have come together to demand health equity. And what that means in terms of context is really opening testing up, removing the physician requirement, more transparency around the data. We can't mobilize our resources to support communities unless we really truly have a good understanding of the transmission rates of the population that actually has the disease, right? So when we talk about incidence and prevalence, those things need good data. And so transparency is a pivotal component of that. Additionally, transportation. We have communities that are very much dependent on public transportation. We know out of New York City that the public transportation system can see the disease. And so when we talk about the interconnectedness of communities, I think it's important to recognize that buses are one vehicle, literal vehicle, that can lead and in fact connects communities. So really transforming the public transportation system through increasing our buses and reducing the amount of individuals on the bus is another element that we think is highly important. And lastly, and I would say most importantly, in a very diverse community, right? Even within Southeast Asian community, we have, you know, the Hmong, we have Cambodians, we have Laotians, we have a ton of languages that are represented in Providence and in other urban core communities throughout the state. And if we're not mobilizing translation and interpretation resources, both in our outreach efforts to educate those communities, but as much as well as in our healthcare system to help them understand how they should be coordinating their healthcare, then, you know, we are at risk of leaving communities behind if we're not providing those services. So that's what we've been doing. When I say we, again, a group of community leaders and organizers, and it's been a call to action by those community organizations and leaders that have really opened an opportunity for me to be on the Equity Council. A meeting is in fact taking place today, and I'm very interested in seeing whether the administration is in fact going to simply validate the small steps it's taken or open that forum up to new ideas and improved steps, right, to improve our responses to potential resurgences.
Lieutenant Governor, from the get-go of this crisis, you've been out in front and seeking those direct pieces of input from communities, and you've been holding town halls and you know, in specific business silos and just in broad conversations. You've gotten a lot of feedback. Are you satisfied with the way that, and again, not to politicize this conversation necessarily, but just from a basic perspective, are you satisfied that the voices of Rhode Islanders are making their way by and large to the policy discussion that's being implemented right now?
Well, I can tell you, I'm happy that the media is going to be involved with the access to the governor during the press conferences. I think that hurt us a lot. I think that, some of my friends encouraged me to storm the press conferences. And make any sense. But I can tell you, if I was in the media, I would have been banging on the door saying, you know, let me in. Because I think that, as the doctor said, I think as more and more of this information gets out and maybe some of the shortcomings that we've had, I think you can fill those gaps very quickly, because the federal monies that I've asked to be released for grants to the small businesses that were required to close, those federal monies are allocated to do exactly what the doctor just said. Those monies can be allocated to the Southeast Asian community for translation and the other contexts. Those dollars could be provided to the doctor in terms of the testing issues that he's talking about. Those dollars could be provided to provide additional extraordinary type of transportation measures right now with communities that need those transportation modes to actually get around. So the point is that there are dollars there, and I think rationing has been the word, and I believe that we have been doing some rationing. I think the governor actually indicated that yesterday when she was asked about my proposal. They're holding on because they feel as though that they can use those dollars to close the budget gaps, which right now it's clear that we can't. And so we should be, you know, very aggressively using those resources and targeted them. If we're hearing from different groups that that they're in need of translators, that should happen tomorrow. That should have happened yesterday. So we have the resources. I think that opening up the dialogue right now, I think the governor's office did admit, Bill, on one of our translation shows with Rosa in our office into the Hispanic community, that they didn't act quick enough to protect the Hispanic community. So let's act quicker. And we can't look back. We have seen a lot of really good things happen out of the governor's office, out of Dr. Scott's office here to protect our safety. But if we're hearing that additional things need to be done and we have the resources, we should not be trying to hold on to those resources in anticipating needing them down the line. They're needed right now, and we should be expending those dollars right now to make sure we help every community in the state of Rhode Island, whether it's small business, Hispanic, Laotian, or Black community, or the Irish community. Once we identify a problem in the state, in all 39 cities and towns, let's make sure those dollars get spent and are directed in a way that that is helpful.
Couldn't agree more. And as sitting there in the press conferences, you know, I understand the fiscal restraint that is implied by holding those dollars for, you know, hoping that you don't have to use them to plug the budget holes and that there'll be more federal stimulus money coming on. But I can understand to an extent the fiscal restraint. But I mean, I think, Lieutenant Governor, I think I've heard you say this, that this is the moment. This is the crisis. This is like when you have literally for me, when I had my savings account, you know, hey, all my gigs are canceled. Guess what? This is the moment you use the account. You know, this is the crisis. So, Dr. Munoz, if you could just sort of touch on in these last few minutes here, and then we'll go back, wrap it up with the Lieutenant Governor. If you could just sort of touch on, as a member of the Equity Council, what are your, I guess, key points right now? What today should we be doing as a state to turn towards a point where we're addressing these fundamental flaws in our society that are exposing themselves right now? How can we plug, instead of worrying about plugging the budget for the state, what do we need to do to plug the gaps in access and the gaps in getting to a point where we can confidently reopen the economy and confidently know that we've got a healthcare situation dialed in? I mean, what would it really take to get there in the immediate sense?
Yeah, well, thanks again, Bill. You know, as the Lieutenant Governor said, it's really about resources, capital resources, and where they're going. I think there's a complete disconnect when we see an administration that's able or willing to take risk to push the economy open and not necessarily take risk in terms of making adequate investments, right, into our healthcare system. And so the things we need to do today, again, as I mentioned, we need to open testing up. We need to ensure that not only do we have testing sites, but testing kits that are able to serve the community. Because as we open those doors and remove that physician requirement barrier, there will be a flood of individuals that will go to those sites to get tested. We understand that. And historically, you know, we've seen that, right, when free clinics open up in communities that have had access barriers. Additionally, we need a contact tracing force, not a mobile application. We need humans to be reaching out to individuals that have been infected, identifying whether those individuals have been in contact with others, and frankly, also supporting those individuals during their isolation or quarantine with resources like food, right, like housing support. And so all of those resources that those individuals need, we also understand that the community at large needs at this time as well. But we have to start with our most vulnerable, and that can serve as a model to help everyone else. Lastly, one thing that I haven't heard much about in terms of the administration's approach to reopening is a resurgence response plan. I did mention this to the Lieutenant Governor the other day. How are we going to treat epicenters of resurgences? Are we going to lock down businesses that are within a given area of those epicenters? And if we're going to lock those businesses down, how are we going to support those businesses to reopen? Because at that point, we really have to look at that issue through a racial and equity lens. And without a resurgence response plan, we're going to be unable to do that. So those are the three areas I think we need to address today.
Lieutenant Governor, if I'll give you the last couple of minutes here, just to sort of zero in on what are you focused on, in your office focused on here over the next week or so, next couple of days, whatever it may be. And I want to say also that, you know, it hasn't gone unnoticed from not only me, but from for in layman's terms, plenty of people have noticed that you've been holding these town halls, that you've been advocating for different communities, and that you're not up there on the stage with the governor. And, you know, again, not to get into that specific conversation, but highlighting the work that you're doing, because it's been addressing the human beings involved here as we move through this process.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, the doctors really focus on the health issues, and I'll rely on, you know, the people who are really in that area to kind of give us the guidance that we need and be supportive of that. As we mentioned, we're in every community. So we know who's being impacted more than others, but everybody's being impacted. I think that's the message that we really want to deliver. Everybody's being impacted. And so we need to make sure that we're responding to every area of the state, every community that makes up our state. And that's what we're going to continue to do, Bill. And the short term, this while we're living inside this crisis, we need to be really quick. And not in a hurry. You know, John Wood and the guy people I read a lot on, the coach, he said, be quick, but don't be in a hurry. So we need to be quick on these issues, not in a hurry. When you're in a hurry, you make mistakes, but you need to be quick and provide the resources in that we have available through those federal dollars to really make the best impact we can. Long term, I can't wait to get back into the conversation about why we're in the spot that we're in. Why are certain communities being impacted the way they're being impacted? Why are we continuing having this bias and some of the horrific things that are happening around the country, whether it's in Minnesota or whether it's in Georgia? Why are those things happening? We need to really understand this on a long-term basis. I can't get wait to get back into the piece that I think is one of the most critical pieces that we have in our state of Rhode Island, which has to do with education and providing the education across the board to everyone in the state, regardless of where they live, regardless of their income levels, and clearly, whether they're middle income, high income, or low income, they're all important. We need to make sure we find the right avenues to make that happen. You know that we have done that. I've done that over well over a decade of work, and we are really impacting families right now in the most affected areas. We are addressing on education through the work with the Merrill Academy and the work that I did as a mayor, setting up a Mayor's Office of Education. We've been running pre-K in our town of Cumberlandville for the last 13 years and doing it at an affordable rate through the mayor's office. So every community should have one of those. Every parent should know exactly how their schools are doing. So yeah, I can't wait to get back into that. But the task at hand right now is to deal with the crisis that we're dealing with right now. So the small businesses are at a crisis point. That is not going to be good for our state if there's a huge amount of failures. As this doctor said, regardless if it's in an Hispanic area, Black area, or White area, or an affluent area, non-affluent area, we really need to pay attention to that. And then I think the messaging that the doctor's providing to make sure that the health component is spoken to in a way that helps the most impacted and affected areas, that'll continue to be something I'm going to work on. And we're starting we've actually identified a nonprofit that's willing to be a fiduciary for our office for donations. And we'll be announcing that today on our call. And we'll be formalizing that next Tuesday on our call. And so anybody out there that wants to help out, wants to provide PPEs, wants to provide computers into areas that the business community needs, wants to provide donations to help out our different communities, whether small business or whether it's the different communities that impacted. We're in a position, our office is going to really take an active role. We're going to partner with a church on Hartford Avenue that we're going to accept these donations, and then we're going to distribute them, because you said, I got my feet on the ground. I am talking to people in a real way. I know where there's need and where there's gaps that aren't being filled. Our office is going to try to fill those gaps.
Rhode Island's Lieutenant Governor Dan McKee, Dr. Luis Daniel Munoz, Health Policy Advisor now on the Equity Council here in the state of Rhode Island. Thank you so much, both of you, and keep the pedal down, because it's impressive and essential work that you're each doing, even if it's not getting presented to the state on television every day at 1:00.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to be here today, Bill.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Listen, subscribe, rate, review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your audio content. And head over to your favorite social media channel. Your search is Bartholomew Town.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.